Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace. I'm your host, Sabine M., and in today's episode, I'm speaking with Toneel Miller. Toneel is a global transformation and people experience leader. So hi, everyone. Today, I'm speaking with Toneel Miller. We got introduced by one of my previous guests, Danielle, and Toneel is doing some really exciting things. She's also an organizational psychologist, so I have a lot of questions for her. But we'll start with the usual, the housekeeping. Hi, Toneel. Can you share a bit of what your job is today and how you got there, what your professional background is?
Almost 2 years ago at this point, during COVID, I ended up starting my own firm, actually. It's called EXT, Experience in Transformation. And that was because, for the most part, I started noticing, you know, over the course of my career, most of my work really kind of is at that intersection of transformational change and change management in organizations, as well as really making sure we have a great employee experience. I just kept seeing so many similar themes and guiding principles with both of them. And so I thought, you know what, that's essentially like, that's what I'm going to do. So I've been doing that for about almost 2 years now, and it's been great. My background is, as an organizational psychologist, I study a lot around psychology, people, coaching, leadership, you know, organizational development and how culture, all those things, how they work in organizations. And so I've spent over 15 years at this point in all the large consulting firms, as well as an executive in a few of my roles along the way, and working in startups as well as, you know, global multinationals, and really advising and partnering with leaders to really operationalize their strategy through things like digital transformation, automation, change management, as I mentioned, now hybrid and remote and future of working, culture, you know, employee experience, leadership development, and then organizational effectiveness as a whole.
So within those companies that you work with, and you just mentioned that it's like the big ones, but also the startup world, who are your typical stakeholders in terms of like profiles or roles within the firm?
Yeah. Well, so it depends. If you think about stakeholders, there's a couple ways to look at it, right? So the people that I would work with and partner with directly is usually the C-level or right below. So those would be my key stakeholders. But when I think of stakeholders, I also think of that's anybody the change is going to be happening to or touching in the organization. So again, if you think about it beyond that level, I'm also working very closely to understand the what we call personas. If you think about design principles and like, you know, that would be the average staff person, that could be managers and directors, things like that as well.
And then I like to ask people what they personally, because this is about the workplace, what they personally appreciate about the office as a working environment.
Yeah, I probably will have a little bit of a different answer than a lot of people. And part of that is just my lived experience. So for the last probably about a decade, again, I've been a consultant. So I'm typically either working at the client site or traveling or just working remotely. And a lot of my time has been remote. And so I've been doing this for a long time. This is not new to me. And so the office has very much served the same purpose for me now that I think it's beginning to now serve for others since the pandemic, right? So I see work as a verb. It's a, you know, it's a thing we do. It's not a place we go. Because again, I've been a consultant, so I'm used to working on an airplane, working in a car, working at home, whatever. And so I've always had that mindset. But and the other part of that too that I think is interesting is that that's obviously a major departure of, you know, the way that most of our workplaces were founded on, which is from the Industrial Revolution back hundred years ago, where there was repetitive factory work and things like that. And our workplaces have not really changed. They were founded on that, but we don't work in factories anymore. At least a lot of us knowledge workers do not, but yet we're still expected to work in that way until the pandemic, obviously. And so the workplaces we had were already so out of date. And so with the pandemic, I feel like it's really forced us into the modern era, right? And rethinking what is possible with technology. And we've seen some amazing things there. And so now I think the purpose of the office really is what I've always seen it as, is that place to go collaborate with people. Maybe you have a working sessions where you really, it's much easier in person, or, you know, celebrations, building community, things like that.
Yeah. Now I'm going to toss a new question at you that just came to me, because you're an experienced remote hybrid worker, I'm sensing. What has been the weirdest place you've ever worked in?
Ooh, that is a great question. And I hadn't thought of that before. I'm sure there's a lot of weird ones, but I think if I was to just throw one out off the top of my head, It's not really weird, though. I guess it would probably be, on a beach in the Caribbean. It's not really weird. It's just far and looks nothing like the workplace. I think other than that, rooftop, in the car, those are not necessarily weird, but they're just definitely not in the office. So, do you have one? I mean, is there anyone that you've ever heard or that you have experience with that's just off the wall?
No, for myself, I'd have to say, so that was like years before remote became a thing. So occasionally I would work remote. And that one day I needed to go to the car dealer to have the car repaired. So I was sitting in the garage with my laptop because I needed to finalize a financial analysis for a meeting that was happening in like 10 minutes or something. So that was rather weird because especially like the people around me were like doing mechanical work and stuff. And I was sitting there with my neat laptop and then speaking in English with people that were not there. I think it was at least weird for the people around me.
Yeah, especially if you happen to have had those, the earbuds that don't have cords, and people are like, who is she talking to? I always love that. I'm always like, is that person crazy?
I might have been on the phone. I don't think that like video conferencing was a thing yet. So they might have been sensing that I wasn't talking to the voices in my head.
Hopefully not.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So you've mentioned it already. You don't think the office, or let's phrase it differently, you don't think work is where we go, but what we do. So what do you think then are some of the other common misperceptions when it comes to employee productivity and engagement?
There's two big ones that come to mind, and I think we're seeing them rear their heads, especially during this pandemic situation. And one is that leaders think that you're only being productive or working if you're sitting in a chair in front of them in the office. But we all know that's not the case. And in fact, I've said this so many times. It's like, I'll be in the office some days and I'll walk by and everyone's on Facebook, everybody's online shopping. And it's because they're expected to be in the office because that's what leaders think, but they're not even working. And not that people aren't working, they're being productive, but the point is they can get their work done so quickly for the most part. You see this all the time, where just because they're expected to be there 10 hours a day, they have to do something to fill the time, right? Going to the lunch five times, going to the water cooler all the time, which isn't bad. It's not a bad thing. But the point is, I think we've learned during this pandemic that we can get the work part done so much quicker when we don't have all those interruptions, when we're not forced to spend all that time in the office, even if we're not working. And so that's number one. I think the other thing I see a lot of, and it's been happening for a while, is leaders and people who are not, well versed in this, they think culture and employee experience are those cosmetic things like foosball tables or free tacos on Tuesday. They think that's culture, and that if you're not in the office, you can't have those things, which means you don't have a culture. And that is probably one of the biggest ones I see right now. I also see that they think culture and employee experience is fluffy, or it's an add-on. It's a cost center. It's like an extra program or an extra party we have once a month. Those aren't what it is. Those are, again, very cosmetic things, and it's kind of like, it's nice to have, but like we've seen all the studies that people basically lose interest in that stuff after like a month anyways. And so what I like to tell them and remind them is actually culture and employee experience is an extremely strategic lever. It's an actual strategy that you do, and there's activities that come out of it. But the strategy and those activities are strategic, and they drive the business strategy. It's not like an extra lunch on, Fridays or whatever. So I think those are the two big things I usually see.
Just thinking of the two things you mentioned, I think it was this week that the UK, or like some companies in the UK, are going to pilot the 4-day week. So that would be very much in line with what you said.
Yep. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I feel like Spain maybe has already started piloting that, or there's a few other countries that have done it. Maybe the northern countries have done it in Europe.
I think in one of the Nordic companies, I'm not sure if it's Iceland or
Sweden or something.
Sweden something, exactly. So yeah, they're ahead definitely when it comes to workplace experience. And the other thing that you just said about culture, it's like it's not the things on top. I was kind of shocked when you said after a month, people lose already interest in that. That wears off really quickly.
I forget. I actually hadn't heard that stat. I mean, I could intuit it, but I hadn't heard that stat until like a couple weeks ago, I think. I don't know if it was Bloomberg or something, one of the podcasts. I listen to so many of them on the workplace, but they had actually done a study, and they basically said that after they see a lot of uptick in usage of the foosball table and like some of the beanbag chairs, whatever you want to call it, for the first month, and then it just goes down, and then it was really expensive to do all that stuff, and no one even cares, and it collects dust. So.
And then what matters is more the relationships you have, right? And that's where the culture kind of reflects. Like, do you have an open communication with your peers and your manager? Is there like a way to approach senior management as well. I think that's, or is senior management seen, or do they go to their big corner office and everybody else is like working on the ground? So there's so many things that are like those little signs that then make up the culture.
Exactly. Because I guarantee you, nobody ever decided to stay with the company because they had a foosball table. Even if they had a terrible boss or they weren't paid well, they didn't stay for the foosball table. I promise you.
Yeah, I have to say, one time I was considering, because the company had a bike garage and that was really, really neat. But then I was like, yeah, maybe you can just put the bike to the rack.
Yeah, you could. So that's getting at kind of, you're getting at a great example of what I'm saying. I think, you know, people almost think of it, if you think about like root cause, right? Looking at what is the root cause to make someone feel engaged? What is the root cause to drive better productivity, et cetera? Instead of, you know, what are those things? Kind of like you said, is it leadership? Is it transparency? Is it, you know, meaning and purpose? Those are root causes of getting, and we'll get into some of those in a moment, I'm sure, but those are the root cause to get people to stay and to feel engaged in their work and be productive, not the foosball table, not the bike rack. Those are like a band-aid. It's like, again, a cosmetic kind of just like little something. It's nice to have, but it's not going to drive the results you're looking for.
It's similar to, I keep coming back to that comparison in conversations. It's actually similar to any other relationship, like getting a thing to fix what's wrong in the relationship itself will never help.
Yeah. It's like, it's great. This is such a great example because it can be applied to so many things. If you think about, at least in the US anyways, like our healthcare system, they would rather give somebody a pill or, you know, medication than to actually address the root cause. And I know this because my very first job out of college, I started as a health and well-being and productivity researcher. And so that kind of opened the door for me to understand all the different behavior change activities in the organization and how they can influence it. And granted, it was about health behavior specifically to, you know, the lifestyle choices and things you could do at home as well as your job to bring the healthcare costs down, to bring your health up, things like that. And so in our system in the US, it's very much like that. They'd rather give you a pill than actually say, why don't you eat healthier? Why don't you move more? Why don't you sleep more? Because those are the root causes. Those are the things that actually move the needle big time if you do them consistently. But instead, our system would rather just throw some money and some pills at it.
So there is I'm sensing a big underlying problem for businesses across many aspects of our everyday lives. Now, how do companies make sure that business strategy and employee action engagement actually go hand in hand, and employee engagement is not something they layer on top of that?
Mm-hmm. Great question. This is something that, again, I've been working on this for a while, and how to really articulate it so people can get it. Because again, I get it because I've been studying it, but I need to help them understand. And so I think it's when this will help leaders. It's just like buying technology for the firm or the organization or the products that the business sells. Just like those two things, employee engagement and employee experience and culture can actually, as I mentioned, drive that business strategy, just like technology can, just like you had to buy all those platforms or SaaS platforms or whatever. This can do that as well. And so the way that you do that is, if you think about the business strategy, right? At the end of the day, what does the business want to achieve, right? You have to operationalize that business strategy through the people and the organization. And in order to do that, you start with what are the organizational goals? And then from there, what is the strategy we're going to have to achieve those goals? And then you back up more. What is the talent and capabilities that we need to drive the strategy to achieve those goals? And guess what? In order to get the best talent and capabilities, what do we need to do? We need to have a good employee experience. We need to have a great culture. And we need to have like technology that enables it, as well as minimizing friction in their day. And so that's kind of how I think about, if you really want to get really simple about how you operationalize business strategy through people, it's literally walking it back. It's not complicated.
So what are your thoughts then around the phenomenon of the great resignation?
Yeah, this is so fascinating. Every day I feel like I'm opening the sports pages because you're seeing companies and people back and forth. First of all, I think it was MIT this week that I saw a study come out from them, and they just released a study that said the top indicator that's driving the great resignation, they had like five or six different things. The number one by far was like much farther above all the others. And they said it was a toxic culture. So think about that. That's the culture, that's the manager, that's the burnout expectation. All that stuff is the biggest driver at this point of the great resignation. And I think the other piece too here is that, you know, during the past few years, right? So we've got to see what's possible during the pandemic. What can we do with technology? How can we treat each other more humanly? And we did. I mean, leaders are crying. Like everybody, for the most part, at least in the beginning, was really operating on more of a humane level versus a, you know, transaction-based level, which is how our workplaces often are. And so now I think what's happening is, now that it's been a while, we're seeing that like that promise of what we did in the beginning juxtaposed against like what's actually happening now, where you're seeing burnout and expectations and people are kind of going back to that transactional nature and demanding people come in the office and all those types of things, I think it's not matching up. And so that's really driving this, right? So that promise was made, we got to practice it and do it, and then now we're not seeing it anymore. So I think that's part of it. And I think the other part too, I've seen this in so many companies, doesn't matter the size or location, is just people are really burnt out. I mean, again, when they let people, some companies let people go in the beginning, and then other people had to take on their job, and then they did it again and again. So there's all this uncertainty, there's change fatigue, we're in a pandemic, all these things. So I think there's that piece about the burnout. And then the other big piece, and this is a theme that I bring into all my work, because I just keep seeing it over and over and over, and you see it done well in the successful companies like Netflix and, you know, others, but then you see it done poorly in most companies, and that is treating people like little kids. This, I cannot overstate this enough. I think this is one of the number one factors before the Great Resignation, but especially now, is that during the pandemic, people had to turn on a dime, right? During a pandemic for 2 years, they showed that they could pivot overnight. During, again, the pandemic, a social justice uprising, economic uncertainty, all kinds of things that were happening, and they could do it overnight and be even more productive, by the way. Didn't even get paid anymore necessarily, by the way. And so now, their bosses are like tone deaf, and they're like, well, yeah, you did all that for us, but time to come back to the office. Time to do this. Time to, what? You know, treating people like little kids again. So I think that's what I would say is in that. And also just people are realizing life is too short, and especially millennials and Gen Z, this is very important to them. And they live their life in a very different time frame than folks from older generations, right? Because they grew up in an era, and you probably are aware of this if you studied the demographics, but all the things that they've grown up in, the world feels a lot more uncertain for them. And so they're like, hey, I want to retire now and I'll work later, or I want to be flexible and integrate my life now, is because I'm expected to be on 24/7 at work. So I need that refresh time. I need those flexible things to happen. So that's where I think it's coming from.
I absolutely get that, this frustration. And I'm oftentimes surprised when I see media coverage of like companies having these very strict, you come back to the office now. I think we talked about it when we had our very first call, that my colleagues in the US were also saying like, yeah, there is like really strict return to office mandates out there that I wasn't aware of. And yeah, I don't fully get it actually, because theoretically, this is a lever for companies to reduce resources they're using as well. So
it's a win-win. That's why I don't get it, because there's a lot of wins for the company as well as the employees. So why wouldn't we capitalize on that? I don't get it.
What probably needs to happen is that our mindsets do change, so that we're open for this new way of working and understanding that it's not the way it used to be, that we're clocking in and out, but that everything's getting a little bit more fluid. And a lot of it depends, I'm sure, on leadership. So what does actually need to change here so that this hybrid can work?
So number one of the things that I see people are doing besides the demanding people come back and all that, that's number one. The other part is increasing surveillance and control, and that decreased trust. Because again, if these leaders can't shake it out of their mindset, which I find shocking, because it's one thing if they'd never done it, right? It's one thing if we said, you know, before the pandemic, well, we think it would work to have the technology and to have a company work remotely, but we don't have the proof. We don't have the time. It's not, you know, I understand that they were scared then because they didn't have the proof. We have about 2 years of data at this point. It's worked very well, actually, and in fact, in the most horrible circumstances. So if we can get our mindsets right, we can actually make sure it works ideally and optimally, like places like GitHub and others that have been remote forever, and like they understand it. So I think I'm seeing them increase surveillance and control, which is not helping anybody. In fact, it's bringing trust way down, if you can imagine. And then trying to replicate exactly how they worked in the office, but doing it remotely. That's another mistake I see. So for example, people on 12 hours of back-to-back Zoom calls expected to have their camera on the whole time, because that would be the equivalent of you sitting in a chair in front of me in the office for 12 hours. And that is not okay. I mean, we can talk forever about Zoom fatigue. Obviously, it's a new phenomenon. I didn't even know what it was, but I've done the research. Others have as well. It's not fake. It's a real thing. And it has to do with the technology, and because it's just the way that we are trying to distinguish emotions from other people and all the different things, that it's just a different medium. And so that Zoom fatigue is real. And so those are some of the things I see leaders making as mistakes, and it's just not helping them at all.
Yeah, I just think what we need to probably acknowledge is that our brain's not made for that kind of thing. I mean, the technology's there, but we're kind of three-dimensional people still, so we don't like the flat screen and we don't get like the other, how do you say that, the other sensory stuff that we usually would get. So subconsciously, we might be really confused about using that tool all the time.
Exactly. And I think that leads us into too, again, these are things that I see as mistakes. But if you want to look at leadership specifically, there's a couple things that I would call out as themes that I think need to change in a hybrid work world. And these are honestly, again, as I mentioned, I mean, I've been lucky enough to work for these big firms that were so far ahead of the game. I mean, we at PwC, we had hoteling and remote and all these amazing technologies like 10 years ago. So this is like so, I'm just still shocked that other companies think this is so new. But one of the things that I think leaders need to realize is it's the same things that we're needing to change anyways in this VUCA world, like the volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous world that we've been in for a long time and we're continuing to be in. So these are things that really need to be happening in that kind of a world anyways. And now we're seeing a really great example of it. And so that is things like, in addition to the flexibility piece we talked about, just getting their heads around working asynchronously, right? So maybe we do things, you know, more online, less Zoom calls, less calls, but we're doing things via email and chat and Slack and docs and things like that, and using technology more effectively because we have the technology. There's an amazing technology out there. A lot of leaders just don't use it yet and they're not comfortable. And I think if you think of yourself as a leader, there's probably three themes that I think you need to keep an eye on, right? So one is transparency. In a hybrid world, you have to be much more transparent. Candid real-time feedback needs to happen. Pushing information as low in the organization as possible, and that allows everybody at every level to feel part of the organization, have meaning, see how they fit into it. And also it helps everyone drive the business forward, which is much more effective for a company if everybody's rowing in the same direction than if there's like five leaders that are driving it and expecting everyone else to deliver. That's just not even helpful for anybody anymore. That's just not working. So number one would be that transparency. Number two, I think, is as we've touched on these themes of autonomy, right? So increasing autonomy, agency, and accountability with clarity for people. So it's leading with context instead of control is very important in this setting. And so it really provides what we call like a freedom within a framework, right? So again, Zappos is really good at this. Southwest Airlines, Netflix, again, is probably the king and queen of this. And so what that means is accountability and autonomy, they're not mutually exclusive. Some people think they are, but they're really not. And so, but in fact, you need them both because accountability without the autonomy is just compliance, right? And then autonomy without accountability is like no direction. So you really need both of them. So the key there for leaders is really just to set a very clear vision / strategy. And then, you know, guiding principles is what I would call it, but then let people own it. Let them figure out how to get there. And then just giving people really important problems to solve. People, especially these, you know, Gen Z and millennials, they want purpose, they want meaning. And I would argue everybody, it's a human need. It's not a generational need. And so I think positioning projects and the work people do in a way, I think this is the number one job of managers especially, is really positioning it so that it connects the dots so people see like how every little menial task they're doing that they think is menial actually, you know, it contributes to the greater good or the greater whole or the organization or how it impacts the client or things like that. That's huge. And so I think those are like some of the big pieces right now. And then just gotchas, like there's a couple of gotchas we've learned, right? So in this hybrid world, there's other questions that come into play as we were kind of alluding to earlier, like equity, right? So do you pay someone the same that works in Iowa as you do in Manhattan? I don't know. That's an issue that's being explored right now, right? So things like that. And then I think just always having really clear metrics and measuring on outputs, not time spent or, you know, inputs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, does make sense. Now, bringing that back to the work environments companies are providing, noted before, foosball tables and the free lunch is not the way forward. What are helpful things to provide to staff for, and I want to make this both like the home office and the office, like what are the things that would be good to have in a hybrid work environment?
Yeah, well, I think you're hitting, I'm going to back up a tiny bit because I think you're right. Hybrid is different than remote only, and it's different than in the office only, right? Hybrid is, just to be honest, we all know it's actually the trickiest thing to do at first because it's like some people are here, some people are there. It's like, how do we do it? Some of the things, the best practices that I've seen is, for example, if you have people, maybe you have some people in the office that day and some people are on the phone or some people are wherever. If there's even one person that's not in the room with you, make sure everybody has their laptop on with the camera in the meeting. So even if it's five people in a conference room, everybody has their laptop and that's how they're doing, because you want people to feel, you want the equity piece to be there, right? So I think that's huge. And again, I think just some of the things that we mentioned, like beyond the technologies, beyond having the right technology and having the office set up for those more collaborative type interactions and in celebrations and things like that, I think it's, I've seen a lot of companies shift their benefits right now. So for example, so that it's equitable for people that are completely remote and people in the office. So before, I think, you know, a lot of companies would offer, you know, transportation cost benefits or parking stipends or things like that or whatever. Those benefits need to actually help people that are not coming to the office as well. And so I think that just kind of really taking a lens of how do we make this 100% equitable and like a similar experience, essentially a similar employee experience, whether you're remote or in the office. I think that's really the lens that all these the leaders and the HR folks need to be looking through right now.
Yeah. So that means if you're providing a free lunch in the office, there should be a delivery coming to the home office. I like that.
Yep. And I've seen that work really well. Yeah.
I mean, there is a lot of things that you can do if you think about it in a wider and more creative way than we are used to doing in that realm, at least. We're very tied to how things have been and have worked.
Very much so. And that's what I've been saying too. I mean, granted, now when we're having this conversation, it's been 2 years, but like even from the very beginning, like March 2020, right? What I've been advising leaders, and I think a lot of people have been, is like, we haven't done this before. I mean, even people that have worked remotely before, no one's had the same circumstances and situation all at the same time. And so just, you know, be experimenting all the time. To your point, there's things we haven't even thought of that could be really great and helpful, you know, that we still haven't even thought of yet because we haven't had to. And so that's what I think is interesting about this time, because, you know, I find that when you have constraints, like we've had these weird different constraints, that's when you get innovative. That's when you get creative, because you have certain constraints and you have to think about problems differently. And so I think I would just advise leaders just keep experimenting, you know, keep trying things out, seeing what works, what doesn't, that type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And basically ask your team what they would like. They might come up with the solution themselves.
It's a no-brainer. And this is, I love that you brought that up, because I think this is with any organizational change or problem or situation, but especially right now, because it's in, it's like you need to co-create things with your people, right? This is not back in the day where, you know, one leader sat at the top and said, I'm doing all these things and you guys, minions, just go do them. That's happening. It's now, it's like, ask them. And to your point, they have so many creative, interesting ideas, and they're closest to the customer. They're closest on the ground. They're closest to their colleagues. They're going to have so many, such a different vantage point and a much more effective one, I think, to your point, because they're closer to it. So I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah. That very nice segue is actually into a question I had coming to change management, because you're supporting on that a lot, I understood. So what is sometimes overlooked or oftentimes overlooked when it comes to change management for future of work?
Yeah, thank you. Great question. And this is something that I think it applies beyond the future of work. It applies to anything, but I think especially now, this is really key. And it's interesting because I read this book recently. I think it came out last year. It's called The Human Element by Lauren Nordgren, I believe is his name. And, you know, it's not rocket science, but it is actually. I mean, I've been doing this work for a long time and I found so many little nuggets in there. And they were things that like I had heard about in passing here and there, or I knew intuitively that this is something important to include, but I think I just somehow had forgotten. And some of these things are, you know, going beyond the typical command and control approach to change management, right? Because again, in a lot of organizations that works or has worked, they think, right? Maybe not that effectively, but it has. So going beyond that, let me push change onto you, to actually what he would call minimizing friction, or friction minimization or mitigation, right? And so what that is, because what we found in what his book was talking about is that, you know, lots of times when you have the best communications plan, the best change plan, you've journey mapped everybody, like that's great. Even co-creating with them, those are great things. But there's always like a level of friction, and there's a lot of different types of friction. I'll talk about a couple of them that he talks about in his book. And these are just, it's so impactful where it's like they would have wanted to do the change, or they want to do it, or they can do it. But there's like this piece of friction that's just stopping them. And this is something that I think we pick up from like customer experience as well as employee experience. But again, so again, the typical change management approach is like leading with the benefits. This is how it's going to be beneficial for you. And that's, again, that's one part of it. We need to keep that. But what he does is he looks at four types of friction, and I'll go through them pretty quickly here because people can get his book and they should get his book. But one is the degree of change, right? So no matter what a change is, if people are not choosing to do it and it's being done to them, it's going to be unfamiliar, right? Because someone else is designing it, deciding it, that sort of thing. And so we need to, number one, make the unfamiliar aspects more familiar, right? So you can do this through things like pilots or a really long runway in your communications plan. So instead of saying, hey, everybody, we're launching this new platform in 2 weeks. Yay, good luck. You literally would want to try to get as long of a runway as you could. I mean, not forever long because people get distracted, but, you know, longer, like a couple months or something, so that they hear about the idea several times, actually, in several ways and several things about it. So they're actually just getting used to it. So even if they're not doing it right now, there is value in mentioning it a few times beforehand, before they have to decide or before the implementation, so that they're actually not so, it's not so new. And it's like, oh yeah, I've heard about that. Okay. I'm not so scared of it anymore. The second piece that he talks about is the level of cost of implementing it, or like the level of effort. You know, so by human nature, we all know we choose that path of least resistance, especially when we're busy at work and we're stressed. We want to do whatever's easiest. And so if we're expected to change something, we need to make that change as easy as possible for people. And so with this, he talks about two different ways to do that. So again, give people a roadmap of like exactly what's happening when, exactly how they do the change, exactly when they're getting training, all those sorts of things, sharing success stories, and then also streamlining it by journey mapping them. And this is, again, the design principles thinking, bringing that in and like journey mapping your personas, journey mapping your people to see all the touch points with leading up to the implementation of the change and then during the change, post the implementation, that sort of thing, and finding out where are those barriers, right? Like, is it like it takes them 10 times longer to do something because this one program wasn't, whatever it might be, you need to figure out what that is ahead of time versus waiting for them to, you know, not do what you're hoping they will do and then wonder why they didn't. The third thing out of the four items is emotion. And this was one that, like, it's so good. And I think it's really missed in the workplace because everyone likes to think of their workplace as a non-emotional place, but we're all emotional people. Even if we're not emotional in the moment, we're humans, right? And so what he talks about is you need to think through when you're journey mapping the people that are going to use whatever the change is to uncover any unexpected emotional hurdles that might threaten them or their broader human needs. And so he gives a really interesting example of this. And he says, like, for example, let's say I'm a manager in a company, right? And I have to hire somebody to work, be my number two, right? To work under me. He said, I forget what the number was, but he did a lot of research on this. And he found that the majority of the time, although you would think that they would choose the best, the most qualified candidate, he found that actually the majority of the time they chose the second most qualified candidate. And why that was is because the manager was insecure about that person who was like the A player, the number one, the best person would actually overshadow them and perhaps take their job. That is something that most people would not even think about, but that is something that happens. And so like things like that, right, when you're implementing change is how does this threaten somebody's emotional or human needs? And then the last one, which is so near and dear to my heart, which is reactance. And that is the whole idea around one of our number one values as humans is having autonomy, right? Having some sense of control over our lives. And at work, we often don't have this, or we don't feel like we have this because we're reporting to somebody else. And so he says, you know, especially when you're driving change, if you don't co-create with people and do change with people instead of to people, you're going to get so much pushback. And so this is where things like the hard sell, right? Why do people hate salespeople? It's because it's like they're just shoving it down their throat. They don't want to feel like they're being controlled. And so that's a big piece. And so the way that you can get around this is just in any way you can, increasing autonomy. So providing options and choices, even if they are your choices as the leader, you're still giving them choices. Even if you're steering their choices, you're giving them options. The other part is, you know, maybe taking a more of a hands-off approach. So instead of just commanding, controlling change and demanding you do this, like demanding you come back to the office, it's more like show success stories of some people who've done it, what you're asking them to do and how it's benefited them and how cool it is, and get some influencers involved and, you know, let people kind of find their way to that change because they want to, or they think they're choosing it. Again, bringing people in for co-creation. And then again, any way you can find to give them ownership. So not just co-creating with you, but if they can actually make decisions, or you kind of crowdsource some of your problems in the organization, have people work with you to find those solutions and own them, those are really powerful. So those are some of the things that I just was blown away by his research. And I think it could be really helpful for people.
Yeah. It's like when you're in it, when you have a share of it, it doesn't feel that scary because you did it as well.
And you're subconsciously buying yourself into any idea as you're working on it. And so one of the ways too, this is another way that he says, you know, kind of starting small is like, if somebody doesn't want to buy your product or they don't want to do whatever change, you can ask them for advice. Say, hey, Could you give me some feedback on this? Could you test drive this? Could you, you know, test this out, whatever? And if they do that small ask for you psychologically, I mean, this pulls into a lot of psychology. We don't need to go too deep into this today, but like Cialdini's principles of influence, all that, it pulls into that. But it's like they're subconsciously buying in because of cognitive dissonance, because they would look back on that and say, well, it can't be that bad if I spent an hour test driving it, or it can't be that bad, I guess, if I, you know, so it's like there's a lot of psychology going on there. So asking, starting small is actually really impactful as well.
Just think, as you mentioned that with the psychology, I mean, looking at what's happening like in social media and like in our other everyday lives with like influencers, I could imagine like identifying people who are like influencers within the company. I mean, not on the scale that they're producing content and stuff, but that they have a network and people look up to them or like spending time with them, like getting them on board first as the change agents and testers of things, and then them showcasing this, other people will want to come. We like mirroring.
Totally. Well, and this is, you're hitting on, you're more of a change management person than you realize, because that's actually part of most change methodologies, is getting those champions slash influencers involved early. And again, this doesn't have, I mean, you want to have leadership involvement, of course, but this is not that. This is actually besides leadership. This is that, to your point, they could be at any level in the organization. In fact, the lower to the ground, I hate to say it that way, but you know what I mean? The more on, boots on the ground they are, the better, because as long as they're influencing people, then people can identify with them. If I'm the most junior person in an organization and the CEO says, hey, I want you to do this. Well, you know, if I like him or her, I respect him or her, I'll be like, yeah, okay, cool. That's, you know, they're role modeling it. I respect that. Okay, I'll do it. But it's even more impactful when I can identify with the person. I can't identify if I'm the most junior person with the CEO, not yet anyways, usually. But if I see my peers and my colleagues and maybe my manager and people that I really admire or who I know are successful stars in the company, if they're doing it and they're seeing these great results, heck yes, I'm going to do it. So I think that's really powerful.
Yeah. While at the same time, the CEO and the senior management should not take themselves out of the change equation. They need to show it too.
They need to be role modeling it too, which is, this is the sad thing, is like a lot of the times that's a disconnect, right? That's what we see where leaders are like, yeah, I'm so bought into this new platform or new whatever, because it's going to save them money or it's going to show the all kinds of benefits for the company. But then they're not willing to do that role modeling. And that's where a lot of the rub comes in sometimes.
Yeah, I remember from these activity-based working models, change programs, like some 5 to 6, 7 years ago, when people be like, yeah, great idea, we don't need to rent more space, we can have more people in the same space. What? Wait, what? My office needs to go to? No.
I was on a project like that, and it was that whole conversion of from offices to hoteling and all that. And yes, exactly what they said. They said, yeah, well, they're going to change. I'm not going to change. It's like, no, we all need to change. That's the problem.
We all need to change. So that actually is a nice cue. If you could magically solve any workplace problem, what would it be?
Yes. We could have a whole day of podcast about this, but I think if I was going to narrow it down right now, I think this is, again, a lot of what my work is and my purpose is really, you know, helping leaders understand that it's not a zero-sum game of profit versus people. I see it as it's a both and situation, right? So if they focus on the people forward or first, as I mentioned, driving that great employee experience, driving that great culture, being that great leader, doing those things internally, which sound soft, but are actually very strategic. If they do that, the profits in all forms are going to flow exponentially, right? And so my thought is, like, if we're optimizing our organizations and the experience our people have with them, reducing friction, all that good stuff that we talked about, this enables people to be their most like productive, engaged, like the most flourishing versions of themselves. And then this itself has so much firepower behind it. And it ends up creating this flywheel effect that drives the business and the, you know, the sales and all the revenue, everything you're looking for leaders as a bottom line metric, this will do that. And so, and you'll have less attrition, and that costs money too. And your people will be happier, and you're going to feel a hell of a lot better when you go home at night, because you're going to be like, yeah, I did some good stuff today. Like, you're doing well and doing good. And there's, you can do both is that's really what I advise leaders. So
very good one. Last question for you. Who else should we have on the podcast? And is there something you would like to ask them?
There's so many. I have so many, like what I call my gurus. So it's people that are, you know, researchers or on all these podcasts that I devour and all the books I'm reading. There's so many. There is somebody who I really, really admire though. And I work with him somewhat frequently now. His name is Enrique Rubio, and he's the founder. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's the founder of this Global Hacking HR. It's a podcast. It's an online community. It's conferences, all that stuff. And he's just a fantastic human being. And he's put so much blood, sweat, and tears into this. And it's just so amazing. And it's free education for people, and it's just huge. And so I would say you should have him on if you can, and I can introduce you if you'd like. And I think I would love to know, because again, he hosts a podcast like you, and I think he at least probably a couple episodes a week, and he's been doing this for a very long time. And so he's got hundreds of episodes, all this stuff. I would love to just, I wish he would write a book. So maybe we could ask him to write a book, because I'm sure he's learned so much. Because literally, if you were to listen to every episode, every conference, everything, it's like thousands. It could be just, you know, so much knowledge. And I think that he should actually write a book. So that would be my two cents.
Okay. So the task now is get him on and convince him to write that book.
Okay, good. We're going to do both of those. Okay, I'll take it to do an action item.
Great. So thank you very much, Tunil. It's been fun to geek out a bit about what the workplace could be.
Yeah, no, I loved it. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.